This is Pure Decking for Thursday. What is today, the 21st?
Oh, God, you're going for a real date? No. It's the 322nd day of November.
This is Thursday, the 322nd day of November, the year of the snake. I'm Morps, and this is the show about stuff that interests me, like descending into a police state, information security, and whatever calendaring system Madman is using, because this is way more interesting than mine. So tonight, obviously, we have Mad Men, we have the BSV. I don't have the dramatic ready to go. Here we go. We have the BSV.
We have the
Suave, and we have the Sard. Sard sliding in at the very last second, jumping into the channel right before I hit start there.
Safe.
Barely.
Well, maybe you probably shouldn't put those blasters between the channels.
So I have just cracked open a fresh Newcastle brown ale. So Sard, since you're last one through the door there and possibly missing part of your pants, what are you drinking?
I'm going to go get a shock top, but I literally just ran in the door, so I don't have it yet. But
I just now see Sard running through the house, getting through the door, not even acknowledging his wife, diving into the computer chair.
Do you have a camera don't set forget- up in my house? Because that's exactly how it went down.
Don't forget him yes, jumping over Toshi.
No, but the camera is set up in your house, but that's not for you.
Oh, okay.
It's so Madman can spy on your dog.
He is a cool dog, so I don't blame you.
What are you drinking, Madman?
I'm drinking Kentucky Bourbon Barrel Ale.
Ooh, nice choice. BSV, man, what do you got?
I'm sorry. Water.
Yeah, I don't know if you can ashamed. Participate in the panel discussion now. You'll be way too sober.
Suave, what are you drinking?
Well, you know, I could submit to peer pressure and just lie and say that I'm drinking something, but I too actually have a big frosty glass of water.
And also,
I think both of you need to turn in your peer decking membership cards. I'm pretty sure that's against the terms of service.
And
you'll
since
be speaking with our lawyers soon.
But I have a question. When do being sober interrupt my capacity of talking incoherently?
I'm not sure I can answer that without being insulting. Rocket snail? So, or you just messaged us. He's going to drink vicariously for the both of you.
Excellent.
Yeah. So, anyways, moving on here. It's gotten so easy to steal identities and credit cards and infected machines that prices went down. Dark Reading put out an article the other day. Researcher Joe Stewart of Dell SecureWorks teamed up with independent researcher David Shear to get an insider's look at what a plethora of hacking services and stolen data cost these days in the underground. I'd love to know what underground they went to, but among their findings, for $300 or less, you can wire credentials to a bank account with a balance of $70,000 to $150,000, and $400 is all it takes to get a rival or targeted business knocked offline with a distributed DDoS for hire attack. Meanwhile, ID theft and bank account credentials are getting cheaper because there's so much inventory. So I copied some of their prices into the show notes here. For a Visa or MasterCard, it's $4.
That's a U.S. Visa or MasterCard.
That's a U.S. Visa and MasterCard, yes. American Express is $7. Discover is $8. I guess those are rarer. Visa or MasterCard in the UK, Australia, or Canada is $7 to $8. So a Visa in the UK is worth the same as the Discover card in the US. That's interesting. American Express in the UK, Australia, or Canada is $12. Discover is $12. That's in Australia and Canada. Visa and MasterCard in the EU are worth $15. EU and Asia. Huh. That's interesting that a European credit card is... Discover and Amex in EU and Asia are $18. So...
Would that just be the difference between the value of the dollar and the value of the euro?
I'm thinking that might be what it is. But that's interesting that credit cards have gotten that cheap.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. That's kind of cool and kind of sad at the same time.
Well, I think it's part of the problem is that credit card companies do jack and squat to try to prevent credit card theft. Their entire... system for dealing with credit card theft is all in the back end. They don't try to prevent it at all. They just try to clean it up efficiently.
Well, if they attempted to prevent it, you would have fewer credit card transactions, and they make tons and tons of cash from easy transactions.
Yeah. Even the ones they roll back, they still make cash on. So, but yeah, no, that's absolutely the case, though. That is that they don't do any prevention up front. It's all on the back end. Try to catch the stolen ones quick and, you know, then clean it up quickly. They don't try to prevent it at all. They don't do anything to protect. Which,
how can they survive like that? Because, like I said, I mean, a lot of times those transactions you aren't liable for. So someone charges $30,000 to my card. I get it back charged. They are still paying. You know, that money's already been spent, right?
There's... two different things that happen on that. A lot of times, the retailer that charged your card is getting hosed. So let's say somebody steals a card and then buys something at Target. Visa's not going to... they're initially going to reimburse Target because they don't know it's fraudulent. But eventually, they're just going to get that money back and Target's eating how much ever that guy spent.
Yeah, credit card theft is usually stealing from the vendor.
Yeah,
I didn't realize that. I was still under the assumption that they still got paid and the credit card company was the one taking the hit.
Generally, it's the vendor.
It depends on the vendor and what their agreement with the credit card company is. Basically, it's how often do they get paid. If they get back charged, and depending on the access that the credit card processor has, they'll just take the money right back out of their account. So, I mean, it's they'll get that back charge that it was a stolen card. And ideally, you know, if they get that back charged soon enough, especially for online and like Amazon purchases and shit like that, they'll be able to just not ship it. You know what I mean? But
right, that makes sense. That's definitely interesting because now, you know, I'm thinking of small, you know, mom and pop businesses and things like that. If they have someone come through, yeah, they're totally fucked. Wow.
And it's not entirely. Visa does actually allot millions of bucks just for fraudulent charges.
Yeah, I'm sure they take it as a loss and probably as a tax write-off or something.
But they make so much money just from cash moving around, they don't want to put anything that would slow down a purchase.
That makes sense.
So.
But, you know, on that same note, though, I've seen a lot of purchases. Back when I used to work in retail, I mean, of course you'd have, you know, someone's card get declined because they're trying to spend, you know, over $500 or something like that, and they get all pissed off because they think it's your fault, but no, it's the credit card company saying, whoa, 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 you know. But they do have the brakes on, kind of, but...
yeah, and you can call and have that turned off if you wanted to.
Right.
If you knew you were doing a big transaction.
But yeah, I mean it's sad that they're that easy to get.
These prices on bottom, are those for botnets?
Sort of. Yes. that's where I'm going next. I still wanted to talk credit cards a little bit. I guess most people don't realize that your credit card, there's nothing magical on it. It really is just a series of numbers tied to your name.
Yeah.
So I mean it's not surprising that a system they designed in the late 70s with zero security in place, you know, and is still in use in this day and age, and is horribly broken.
It's true, because, like, all it like you said, it's just, you know, two sets of numbers, and they've got it. And just to think, like, anybody who's, like, you know, been online a lot, there's all kinds of different services that you've used your credit card with. Just imagine, like, all it takes is for one of them to get hacked, and then they've got your information. Well, you know, if they're not practicing good security.
Ideally, they shouldn't be storing the numbers beyond the transaction requirement at all. But
how many times have you ordered pizza and not needed to key in your credit card number?
That's, you know, that's true.
I know for a fact that a ton of places keep that stuff.
Yeah, like, they're really not supposed to, without saying, "Hey, we're keeping your credit card information and giving you the option to delete it."
Yeah.
But, I mean, how many of us just go click, "You want a game on Steam," and there it is?
Yeah.
Which I think is also part of their plan, because it's so easy, you know, that it's a no-brainer. It's two clicks, and like, oh, look, I own this game now. You didn't, you know, feel...
Oh, yeah, there's no thinking about it. There's no handing you the money. I mean, it's the ultimate impulse buy there, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. There's no handing money to or seeing some sort of transaction. It's just click, click. Oh, it's in my Steam list now. Good go.
So, yeah. Now, before Madman goes too nuts here, I think these prices are per computer. The next thing up is for batches of infected computers. For a batch of 1,000, it lists out a price of $20. I think that's per computer.
I don't think so.
Maybe not. Just for time on the botnet, maybe not.
That could just be like per hour. Yeah. You want 1,000 computers, do Hammer... Google.
Yeah, it's $20 for 1,000 machines on a botnet. 5,000 is $90, 10,000, $160, $15,000, $250. I mean, that's nothing for time on a botnet. And if you know what you're doing, you know, you rent the botnet for 20 minutes and you have all the bots pull down your bot. I'm sure that shit happens too. But you know, the thing with the bots, what you really want to do is you want to set up the, what were those things called? Domain parking pages, you know, where it's some random domain covered in ads. You want your bots loading all that up and just clicking on crap.
Yeah.
So that's, you know, you make your money back real quick right there. But can you do Blender renders? Yeah, you know, if you load your client up, you probably can. But, I mean, it's just, you know, I mean, the prices on these are just nuts. That just tells you how common these botnets of size are. And you think you're doing something against them and, you know, keeping your network clean and all that. I mean, individuals are. But, I mean, it just shows you how many... are out there that's what the prices are,
right? And like I said, it's kind of crazy, kind of cool, but at the same time very, very sad.
Yeah, I mean, it kind of makes me wonder how hard is it to get into some of these underground markets to be able to do some of this.
I've wondered that too.
I mean, because I've been in some of the IRC channels and watched some of the transactions take place, but I've never participated, if you know what I mean. Usually the transaction is you see a couple of people like kind of trying to type shady. I don't know how else to describe it. And then they both disappear as they've gone into a different channel to negotiate.
Right. So they're typing with their shifty eyes.
Like, are you breaking the law or having type sex?
Until it exchanges hands.
Is typing with shifty eyes kind of like typing with air quotes?
Yeah, I think it is. It's like, you know, sarcasm mode on your keyboard there, sort of. I just... I mean, I don't know how else to describe it. If you've ever been in one of these IRC channels and watched them do it, you know damn well what they're doing. Because somebody's advertising, and you see somebody else ask them a question, and then both of them get real quiet for a few minutes. So, I mean, but, yeah, I don't know. It could just be a weird cut on for cybering. So
you know, who knows? I'd like to, you know, I wouldn't actually go there because I'd be terrified, but I would like to go find that market and just browse it, because I'm sure that it's quite an informative read, and you know, it might even be useful from a security standpoint, finding out where these numbers may have come from and stuff.
Well, it's such a hard problem. There's not a great way to tackle it. I mean, plus, too, something else to keep in mind, especially with infected computers.
Mm-hmm.
Most of them are probably not in the States.
Oh, yeah.
So the common way to build a botnet these days is to grab your Zeus builder, build your executable, install it in, Adobe Photoshop, and then load the Photoshop installer carrying your executable up onto the Pirate Bay. So, you know, that's probably the most common ways to do it. Of course, you know, the email scams and the drop-by downloads and everything else you can think of. But it's not always Zeus either. I'm just using that as the example because that one's easy.
Right.
I don't know if anybody else has actually played with it, but it's retardedly stupid easy to build a botnet these days. If you know what you're
looking
for. I might
have to get you to show me some of these later on, just for my own.
I'm not sure I want to point you at it, truthfully. That code is shady as hell. And the test rig,
sure, yeah.
The test rig I'm building is air-gapped from everything, and when I'm done with the testing, I mean, I'm doing it all in VMs, right?
Right.
And when I'm done, I'm formatting the hard drive of the physical mm-hmm. machine that's running all the VMs. Because even though I'm fairly certain it's okay, I don't know that for sure, especially with some of this code. I mean, I doubt there's VMware, you know, VM jailbreaking or anything in there, but you never know. Because you're intentionally right. pulling down virus code and running it. It's like God knows what it's doing.
Right.
Yeah.
So. But it's fun to play with, so you kind of see how the interaction is and what the bot master sees, and it's interesting to play with. I've debated back and forth whether I wanted to do a dojo on that or not. Just simply because I don't think somebody who's moderately intelligent would have a problem handling the thing, especially if they're aware of what it is. But just pointing people at, you know, go Google this, this, and this, and find this random media fire download. Seems like bad advice, you know what I mean?
You know, to me, going online, like, finding viruses on purpose and then, like, you know, putting them onto a computer that's all isolated, it just kind of brings images to my mind of, like, almost like demonology, where somebody's going out preparing the fucking circle and summoning the demon and keeping it contained, but it might it might escape.
Right.
I'm also seeing a sacrificing your computer to that demon.
I'm glad we're just talking about the computer and not the three chickens and a goat that I got to bring into work next time I'm working on this. Anyways, three chickens, a goat, and a pair of pantyhose, and I still haven't figured out how exactly you're supposed to make the proper sacrifices to the computing gods here. So,
rubber duckies. That is.
Oh,
all.
The rubber duck. That's what I forgot. Yeah. Okay. Rubber duck and one Mac user. Got it. Okay.
Yes.
I used to do that when I worked on help desk. Have you tried making the proper sacrifices to the computing gods? What? Never mind. Do this.
Did you stab a Mac user?
Hang on, let me go see if she was using... Nope, she wasn't a Mac user. I'm going to have to stab somebody else now, aren't I? Wait, did you stab somebody before you called me?
I was trying everything to get the computer to work before I called. I got a copy of your checklist. I wasn't able to take down Superman either, but I also didn't think he existed.
That's the wrong checklist.
Oh, damn it.
You've been robbing banks all along the East Coast, haven't you?
I'm not admitting that on a radio station.
So, I do think it's interesting, though, next thing here, on the list is Remote Access Trojans. They go from 50 to 250. So this isn't just a botnet where you can collect information, maybe ping websites DDoSing. This is full-on remote control of a machine. So I guess it would depend on the control panel for the infected machines, but full-on rats are like, you can get VNC-style access to a machine.
Right. Do you think that's targeted? I mean, $250,
maybe?
That's kind of steep.
I would assume so. I know that I cut it out because of space reasons, but on the doxing, the very last thing, that was the cause of its price spread, was who are you targeting? So I imagine rats might be something similar. Could just be a number of them, too.
Yeah.
You know, and I guess that I'm betting that depends on your target. If you had a rat on, I don't know, an Amazon EC2 instance that somebody had spun up and forgot about, now you get another box on the internet that that your name's not attached to. But if you had a rat on an Amazon EC2 instance that's running, say, a small-time banking website, that's an entirely different matter. So I imagine your target matters. So
good point.
I have a rat in the oh crap, I completely blanked on the three-letter agency.
NSA.
NSA. Yeah, it's NSA. Like I'm spying on the guy spying on me. Check it out. I'm watching my porn in a mirror.
You know that effect you get when you put two mirrors, you know, parallel to each other and stand in the the infinite tunnel country. I see Madman doing this on his computer screen, watching the NSA watch him. Can you imagine the NSA guy freaking the fuck out? I don't know. Rats are interesting though, because they're not always Trojans. I mean, this makes Remote Access Trojan is the acronym they use there, but rat actually usually just means remote access tool, because technically, VNC is a rat. Remote desktop is a rat. It's right. Just they call it that when it's a bad guy, I guess.
Right.
So the last thing on here that they found for sale was doxing. You know, going up and getting people's information, social security, private information, Facebook accounts, shit like that. The price range they put on there is $25 to $100, and that is targeted. That's, you know, how hard is it to get on somebody and stuff like that. So
don't be saying that. RU's gonna start charging us now. He knows that people do this for money.
Yeah, if
he just
wants
does
to charge,
Google dorking, right?
You know, a lot of times that's all doxing is. I mean, it can get more involved than that. If you can get into their Facebook and then use that to get into their email and then use that to get into other accounts like a Facebook and LinkedIn and, you know, really mine all their private stuff. There's also RU's listening to the stream.
God damn it, I told you. He knows now.
I'd hate to think it was that easy to get my personal information just Google dorking.
Oh, it is. Try it
sometime.
I'm
going to attempt it right now.
Madman's going to dork himself. Do I get extra for naked photos?
Of myself on the internet? Since I don't think there's a naked photo of me on digital material anywhere.
Rule 34, man. Rule 34.
Yeah, those are some Photoshop freaky, now. freaky ink drawings there.
Yeah. Are you, if you really want to get paid for it, you're going to have to probably get
on
ITP
LinkedIn
chat room and find somebody who's willing. Kind of seems like a back alley whoring. You know, it really does. I mean, so, well, Madman, what'd you find?
I found out I'm a black man and I have a doctorate.
Hey, you have a doctorate.
Somebody stole your identity and made it better.
If that's what's going to happen, I just need to start putting my personal information out there and see how good my credit score gets.
Oh, hell. All right. Watch out. They're saying in the chat room, Big's going to make the Rule 34 of you there, Madman.
Actually,
he had Rule 34 of you, didn't he?
Oh, yeah. Big has a picture of my ass.
Sort of.
Yeah.
Close. That was probably his favorite Gen Con souvenir.
Yeah. I understand he threw his phone across the truck when you did that.
Yeah, pretty much. But really, who wouldn't? Text coming from Madman with something that looks suspiciously like a hairy ass.
Oh, hell. Good times. Good times. Okay, let's, shit. I accidentally put my IRC over my notes. That's not good. Just start reading the IRC instead of the show notes. First story up is from theindependent.ie. A principal has called the move to switch students from tablets or from books to tablets an unmitigated disaster and has ordered new books for the first year classes. The book to ebook move was deemed a disaster following major technical issues with the majority of the HP Elite Pad tablet devices. Families of students at the Mount Rath Community College in Laos paid €550 for the devices at the beginning of the school year. They did have the option to pay for the tablets in installments. We had a number of issues with the devices, Principal Martin Gleason told The Independent. We met with HP yesterday, not for the first time, and they are doing everything in their power to resolve the problem. In the meantime, we have replaced the tablets with books for students, and the parents do not have to pay for these. We're not blaming anyone. HP have said the issue is a priority for them. In a letter sent to parents, Mr. Gleason wrote, "The rollout of e-learning, which involved the use of HP Elite Pads and e-books, should have been an exciting and new way to move forward. The HP Elite Pad has proved to be an unmitigated disaster." There's something you want on your marketing. I copied it in twice. "I met with HP representatives on a number of occasions to address the issues. To ensure stability and continuity of education, I've ordered a full set of books for all students. Students experiencing problems such as tablets failing to switch on, tablets spontaneously go into sleep mode, devices looping when performing automatic repairs, system board failures, and issues with Wi-Fi. Principal Gleason said it was an informed decision to choose the HP Elite tablet. A year and a half worth of research was put into choosing the right device for us." Sure it was. "We wanted a device that was..." Somebody got a BJ out of that deal, I'll tell you what. "Somebody wanted a device that was effectively a computer in tablet form for our students, so we'd have a word processor, sufficient memory, etc. The memory of the HP device is 64 gigs. It far exceeds other tablet memory capacity."
Holy crap.
That is kind of big.
For a tablet? That's huge.
I'm not sure these are so much... Well, I don't know. Laser's got a tablet that blows that thing out of the water.
Well, okay. Wait, no, I take that back. When they said memory, I'm thinking RAM. They're talking about storage.
They're talking
capacity.
Storage.
Yeah.
Never mind. I was like, a tablet with 64 gigs of memory. What the hell?
You can't have an honest assessment when they weren't working to their full capacity, he said. In a statement, HP said it was working very closely with Mount Rath Community School to resolve some technical issues, and it's committed to doing so in the shortest time period possible. Yeah. So, what I want to know is, what operating system were these tablets running? HP Elite Pads. You know, I'm just going to search those right now because I meant to do that earlier and I completely forgot. Are they Windows? Are they Windows
looks like
tablets?
Windows 8. Yeah.
Or Windows 8 pads. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, there's your problem.
Imagine that.
Yeah.
So yeah, they didn't go with any of the proven tablets. I mean, I figured a school would go for iPads personally.
Did they not?
They're most commonly known commodity. I mean,
right, but it's probably the price is why they went with HP.
Yeah, if they paid $550 for each pad, that'd get you a modern iPad.
Probably paying $100 per iPad.
Well, plus
or
you know
HP pad.
You got to remember too, it's running Windows. And I bet you they're like, oh, well, we have Windows software, so we need something that's compatible.
Right.
You'd think that at least order one be first and test it.
Well, they did say they took
a
like
year and a
two
half, years.
A year.
Yeah.
Did somebody just sit around surfing the internet and just say, it looks good,
Well, I wonder if they could have tested it for a year, but did they actually give it to students to test for a year, or was it like the principal carried it around and used it in meetings and stuff like that for a year?
Used it as a paperweight.
I think the principal probably may have used it for its intended purposes for a year, not thinking that students are going to use this to play video games and look for porn.
And also, in the story, it's 550 euro, so it's around $750.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean, this is... And the sad part is, you know, going digital for schools is not a bad idea.
No, not at all.
It makes perfect sense.
Especially with the cost of books.
Right. Yeah. No shit. But
a lot of times the cost of the e-books, they're not that much cheaper.
If
you're looking for e-textbooks.
That's a whole other issue right there. You know, there's a lot of, like, basically open source textbooks that actually completely cover all the information. But yeah, you're right. Most places don't ever use those. Some professors and stuff will use them, but it's pretty
also
rare.
Easier to pirate books.
Yeah.
See, I would think they would just, I mean, you know, either go with a known commodity like an iPad or just buy laptops. I mean, aren't the low-end Sunday special bulk laptops like $300 a pop these days?
Yeah, they're nothing.
I mean, you know, you can put ebooks on the laptop, and it's a commodity most of their people are going to be familiar with. So, I don't know. I just, the sad part is stuff like, stories like that are going to keep other schools from trying it. Because it's like, look, they spent all this money, and they got shit.
Yeah.
So, but I mean, who the hell ever heard of HP Elite Pads? I honestly had not heard of that build of tablet before the story.
A school?
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess so.
So. Yeah. All right. Next one up is from nakedsecurity.sophos.com. More than 42 million plain text passwords hacked out of online dating site Cupid Media have been found on the same server holding tens of millions of records stolen from Adobe, PR Newswire, and the National White Collar Crime Center, according to a report by security journalist Brian Krebs. Cupid Media, which describes itself as a niche online dating network that offers over 30 dating sites specializing in Asian dating, Latin dating, Filipino dating, and military dating, is based in Southport, Australia. Krebs contacted Cupid Media on the 8th of November after seeing the 42 million entries, which, as shown in the image on Krebs' security site, shows unencrypted passwords stored in plain text alongside customer passwords that the journalist has redacted. Oops. Cupid Media subsequently confirmed that the stolen data appears to relate to a breach that occurred in January of 2013. Andrew Bolton, the company's managing director, told Krebs that the company is currently making sure that all affected users have been notified and have had their passwords reset. In January, we detected suspicious activity on our network, and based upon the information we had available at the time, we took what we believed to be appropriate actions to notify affected customers and reset passwords for a particular group of user accounts. We're currently in the process of double-checking that all affected accounts have had their passwords reset and received email notification. Bolton downplayed the 42 million number, saying that the affected table held a large portion of records related to old, inactive, or deleted accounts.
That doesn't matter. Their dating password is the same as their banking password. I can tell you that, and I'm not a security professional.
The number of active members affected by this ban is considerably less than the 42 million you have previously quoted. Cupid Media's quibble on the size of the breach data set is reminiscent of which Adobe exhibited its own record-breaking breach. Adobe, as Krebs reminds us, found it necessary to alert only 38 million active users, though the number of stolen email and passwords reached the lofty heights of 150 million records. Oh, geez, I didn't realize the Adobe hack was that big. I'm not surprised. I just hadn't heard the number.
they originally came out and said, oh, it's, you know, like 6 million user accounts. No, no, it's more like 150 million. It was huge.
Yeah, I remember. I saw the 6 million number because I, you know, we got a couple of those notifications at work, It's like, oh, damn it. So,
yeah.
More relevant arguments about the data set size is the fact that CupidMeta claims to have learned from the breach and is now seeing the light as far as encryption, hashing, and salting goes, Bolton told Krebs. Subsequently to the events of January, we hired external consultants and implemented a range of security improvements, which include hashing and salting of our passwords. We have also implemented the need for consumers to use stronger passwords and made various other improvements. Krebs notes that it could well be that exposed customer records are from the January breach, and that the company no longer stores its user information in plain text. Yeah, but I mean, okay, you know, I don't even need to finish the rest of this because they started testing these passwords against Facebook, and Facebook said they're going to look at it too, and they were finding matches. The thing is, sure. It's 2013, and people are still storing customer passwords in plain text.
That's exactly what I was just going to say. What the hell is wrong with these people? Oh, now that we've been owned, yeah, now we'll salt and hash our passwords. What, like you said, this is 2013. That should have been done a long time ago.
Yeah. How hard is it to really salt and hash something, really?
Well, it depends on the size of your kitchen, the blender you have, and the size of your salt shaker. And more importantly, it's three lines of fucking PHP code. Sorry.
And I don't blame you. It's sheer stupidity at this point for anybody to run a password system without it.
I'm not even kidding. It really is a fucking simple thing to do. If most everybody works in PHP, and they've got SHA, they've got, you know, they've got MD5. They got plenty of functions or libraries for doing this. It's not hard.
And so, now, everyone on that dating site somehow has a preference for amputee German midgets, and your bank accounts are being drained. Have a nice day.
I amputee German midgets.
Well, you know, they did say they were a boutique specialty dating site. I'm sure there is a amputee, what'd you say, amputee midgets?
Amputee German midgets. They've custom made some new orifices.
Oh, man.
It's okay. Boutique, and it's not even that site that I'm worried about people hacking into, because that's the worst you can do, is you can set their dating profile to something strange. It's that most people use the same password for everything. So you think all they're doing is changing your dating profile to something obscene and weird, which is what I would do to people. No, these are criminals. They're stealing your money. That's more useful.
And they're probably not changing your preferences because they don't want you to know they stole your credentials.
Oh, no, they're not. Like I said, I'm the one that would do that because I would think it was funny. I mean, some chick's scrolling down some dude's page and notices in quotes, "I've always wanted to do a colostomy hole." He's never going to get a date. But that's something I would stick on their profile. The guys that broke in there, they're stealing his money. They're opening up... No, they're not stealing his money because he'd noticed that. They're opening up new credit cards, and I will help you with that if you ever want to come to my store. That's actually one of my new jobs. And we'll open you up a nice line of credit so long as you spend it all there. But, yeah.
Damn.
They're opening up new credit cards and then going to buy stuff.
See, now, that's the thing you put on a Facebook page, not their dating site. But you want something their mom's going to see. And I think...
and I think that would probably be the same password.
Yeah, it probably is. All right.
You said they were checking Facebook.
Yeah, they were. I skipped that part because I'd already hit the part I cared about. That in 2013, somebody's still keeping their passwords in fucking plain text.
Did they pull this up in a Google Docs? And like, was this stored on Google too? Because that is great whenever I pull those up.
No, I don't. It'd be on the Krebs site where he found it. So, next story up is from Torrent Freak. The Supreme Court of Belgium has ordered local internet providers to proactively search for Pirate Bay proxies and block subscribers' access to these sites. The order is one of the most far-reaching decisions when it comes to website blocking based on copyright infringement grounds. A spokesperson for Bellicom, one of the largest ISPs, described the verdict as inappropriate and or disproportionate and unacceptable. So, just to clarify, they're telling the ISPs, you have to block the Pirate Bay and its proxies, and you have to go out and find all their proxies.
That is...
They know the definition of a proxy, right?
Nope, apparently not.
They know the cost of this, right?
I believe that's a big case of they don't give a damn.
The resource drain.
I believe that still falls under not their fucking problem.
This is kind of like offloading all piracy complaints onto, I don't know, the end use. This is stupid.
Why do you think I'm talking about it?
Because it's stupid. And I'm glad I'm not in Belgium.
So, in 2011, Belgium was one of the first countries to implement a court-ordered Pirate Bay blockade. The action was the result of a lawsuit between Belgian Anti-Piracy Foundation and ISPs Bellicom and Telenet. It's really hard to say that one and not say Telnet. It is Telenet. T-E-L-E-net. Though the lawsuit BAF hoped to force the internet providers to block subscriber access to the famous torrent site. Initially, the Antwerp Commercial Court ruled in favor of the ISPs, describing the notion of a wholesale site blocking as disproportionate. However, the decision was later overturned by the Court of Appeals, and access to the Pirate Bay has been blocked ever since. As in other countries, however, Pirate Bay users soon found other ways to access their favorite torrent site. With hundreds of proxies to choose from, they simply changed their bookmarks and continued to download and share as usual. To address this issue, a new verdict was issued last year requiring all Belgian ISPs to block current and future domains that provide access to the Pirate Bay. Several ISPs decided to challenge this broad order, but without result. This week, the Supreme Court upheld the ruling of the lower court. This effectively means that all providers have to proactively police the internet for domains that provide access to the Pirate Bay, report those sites to the authorities, and add these domains to their block list. The verdict, which has yet to be published, is permanent, and there are no further options to appeal in Belgium. At this point, it is unclear whether the order is limited to the Pirate Bay, or if other sites, such as ExtraTorrent and Kickass.to, are also covered. The internet providers are not happy with their new duties as internet police, with Bellicom spokesperson Jan Margot describing the verdict as disproportionate. Internet providers are obligated to continue to block the Pirate Bay even if the site moves to another domain. That's a very broad definition which obliges providers to police the entire internet. This is something we cannot accept, Margot says. The Pirate Bay is not the only torrent site that's currently blocked in Belgium. A few months ago, several ISPs quietly expanded their block list with cat.ph, BitSnoop, ExtraTorrent, and other domains. With the new Supreme Court ruling, this list is expected to grow indefinitely. I'd say.
Yeah.
They're literally going to have to... Geez, how would you do this? You're just going to have to watch every user's traffic and anything that looks like it might be a torrent, just like send the Stasi around to execute the user. I mean...
I know the only way they can do this. Literally go around the border and cut every outgoing line. Or incoming line.
You know, that's probably what they're going to end up doing eventually.
Well, that's the only real way to actually enforce these, since...
Well, that's the whole reason I want to talk about it. Anybody who understands basic networking is going to understand that what they have been ordered to do is not feasible. There's not, like, you know, you have to block the Pirate Bay and anything that could provide access to the Pirate Bay. Well, great. Why don't we just shut down our company? I mean.
Yeah, because you aren't going to be able to do it.
You can't.
It's an unenforceable law.
Absolutely. Right. And they just won the court case over it. So
I can rent some rats for like $50, right?
Something like that.
I wonder how many of those are on any Belgium, like, government website. This is going to be kind of specific, so it might be on the 250 range. But it would be great just to have them start mirroring the Pirate Bay.
Oh, that is evil.
Oh, you don't have to do that. you can just... I did a digital dojo a while back about a project that was about nothing but spinning up the free Amazon EC2 instances and turning them into proxies to get around countries that have inappropriate censoring of the internet, which is what this is.
Oh, that was like two or three ago. But I don't want to get around the inappropriate censoring. I want them to start censoring government websites based on them thinking it's the Pirate Bay.
Yeah. Well, you know, the real damage of this is, besides just making them censor all anything related to the Pirate Bay, when's the next case coming up to say, well, you've got them blocking the Pirate Bay, shouldn't they be blocking child pornography? So they start blocking anything that could possibly be related to that. Well, you know, they're already blocking kiddie porn. Maybe they ought to just block regular porn, too, because, you know, that's bad. And then now, nope, they're blocking, that's immoral. So we might as well just get down to the point where we're blocking anything that says anything we don't like. And yeah, it's a slippery slope argument, which is a logical fallacy, but you can see it from there.
I'm not even worried about the slippery slope. I'm looking at the cost of attempting to police the internet if you're just looking for the Pirate Bay. Either the providers aren't really trying and they just have some dude in a closet and they say that's his job so they're in government compliance. Or they're ramping up the bills they're charging for everyone that they're providing internet access to.
That
too. Those are two highly likely scenarios.
Or another one that I'm thinking even worse. They just start not just filtering what they're putting down their pipes, they're starting to monitor their users, like hardcore, putting boxes on, looking at seeing what everyone is doing. So that's another place all of your personal information is being cached and easily hacked.
Yeah. Well, ultimately what this comes down to is somebody in that court system didn't have a fucking clue of what they were telling them to do.
Obviously.
Like, well, just block it. You can do that, right? No?
Like, we can block the Pirate Bay. And if you want us to block the Pirate Bay, fine. But then you said anyone that's mirroring it. So now you're saying we should block the internet. Like, the entire thing.
Yeah, that's like I said, they didn't know what they were asking them to do. So I think they ought to just, whitelist it down to like Facebook, Google, and a few other sites. And, just the major stuff that you know is not going to be mirroring anything. But, like, accidentally get a few of the government sites and shit like that. And then when they come back, what are you doing blocking all this? We are complying with court orders. Just to piss everybody off.
There you go.
Yeah.
I mean, that's how I'd do it.
Right.
Just piss everybody off by complying exactly with what the court said to do so you get popular attention on it. But it's not going to happen.
Yeah.
Oh, I think it would be great if they did it for a week.
So, there was back when this first was going on, there was somebody who had set up an offline mirror of the Pirate Bay. Like, you could just download the Pirate Bay's index. So, I mean, any FTP site could potentially be mirroring it. Better block it.
How am I going to get my World of Warcraft updates?
Yeah, fuck your World of Warcraft updates. You could be going to the Pirate Bay.
Right.
I'm glad I'm now obsessed with Borderlands. Oh, that's got to kill Steam. Doesn't Steam use peer-to-peer?
Not really. So, I don't know. I mean, I think this kind of counts as throwing out the baby with the bathwater there, but hey, whatever.
Well, they've been trying to just block stuff outright for how long now?
And since the internet started.
It's like a hydra. You cut off one head and two more sprout up. And, maybe if just one country blocks website, it's not going to spur more people to make new websites, although it might. If you start getting, lots of countries doing it, or, a large number of internet users, then I think that, you're just going to see alternative services popping out of the woodwork.
Yeah, I mean, that's eventually what it's going to come down to. So, pirate boxes, good lord, they'll just be shooting anybody who they think
God. Next coat woolen.
As soon as I get my
declare war on Pirate Bay.
Yeah, that's no kidding. I tell you what, I'm going to sit down and finish my pirate box. I've got a sweet build for a pirate box planned. It's going to look like the internet from the IT crowd when I'm done, too.
Nice.
Cool.
I've got all the parts. I'm just waiting on the plastic glue gun, as Big calls it. And glue it all together. I got a notification from them, finally. They're just finishing up October. It's going to be... I'm not going to get the damn thing till December.
Oh.
So... But, I'm not using a Wi-Fi router. I'm got a Raspberry I'm going to use. That way I've got some, can actually modify it a little bit. All right, next story up is from metro.co.uk. Anyone caught possessing pornography which depicts rape could be jailed for 3 years under new government plans. This is in the UK. It is against the law to publish images of rape, but a legal loophole means that possession of the material is currently unpunishable. The changes to the law, which will be introduced in January, will bring England and Wales in line with Scotland, where the offense carries maximum sentence of 3 years in jail. Mr. Cameron is targeting websites which show videos and images of rape, whether they claim they are quote-unquote simulated or not. The Prime Minister has previously attacked websites which show the material, saying these images normalize sexual violence against women, and they are quite simply poisonous to the young minds who see them. In a further crackdown on what Mr. Cameron referred to as the darkest corners of the internet, that's not the darkest corners of the internet, buddy, Downing Street will tomorrow announce that a national database will be created to give every illegal image a label. Oh my God.
I want that job. They won't be able to print anything that I write, but I want that job.
The move is designed to make it easier to have the material removed from the internet. I just... Madman.
Something out there that's just completely demoralizing and inhuman and gross is going to be named Happy Kitty.
You have to go through the UK again, not realizing what they're asking. UK government wants every image on the internet indexed.
Jesus.
I think I can find a million copies of someone's big toe on the internet.
Probably. I'm sure some of them aren't big toes, but you know, you'd never know the difference.
My question is how many photos get uploaded each day?
Enough that you can't do what they think they're going to do. I
understand making a law banning like rape porn and any of the other kind of sketchy porn where people get hurt and stuff like that, but like I feel like they're kind of stretching it with the whole simulated thing. Because, well, like, that could be right down to, like, you know, bondage tapes and stuff like that. Like, where do you draw the line? So, like, all of a sudden you have all these people who have, like, completely legitimate material who are now criminals.
But that's the thing, is you don't know where they're going to draw the line. I mean, they could just be standard, regular old missionary. Oh, she's not smiling the whole time. That's rape. And, you know, off to jail you go, because they want to get rid of all porn on the internet. And I don't mean to defend rape sites on the internet, because that's probably horrible. I mean, even the ones that are simulated, I mean, that's... I have a hard time seeing why you would want to watch that, personally. If somebody's into it, and everybody's, I don't know, getting paid, consenting, whatever, I don't know. I mean...
I'm against thought crimes.
There you go. Thank you, Madman.
Yes, you punish rape. Rape is horrible. And if this is an actual video depicting a rape, it's evidence of a crime. Track down the bastard doing it. Douse his balls with sulfuric acid. Let him live for a couple years and then shoot him in the head.
Damn.
But porn, just like... Especially, you know, we'll go with this is horrible, but it exists, and it's a Japanese comic book. Rape Man. It's tasteless. I will never buy it. I will never look at it. Yes, I know it exists, but I read a lot of strange things. Not an actual copy of it. I want to kind of throw out to in defense of myself. But the sickos watching or reading that, they're not committing a crime if all they're doing is reading horrible works of fiction.
Yeah, I mean, what about 50 Shades of Grey? Wasn't that basically a big rape book?
It's BDSM. Everyone's consenting.
Okay.
But yeah, it's simulated rape if you turn it into images. Because you don't know what's in the people's heads at that point.
You know, I mean, you know, how do you use the safe word if you put a ball gag on them? I mean, I just, you know, kind of wonder. But
the safe word's banana. Now here's your ball gag.
I don't know enough about the... we need syntax to answer some of these more technical questions, because I don't know.
The safe word is interpretive dance.
Oh, God! now we're going to strap you to this chair. So...
Google doesn't give me an answer straight up when I just say big toe, but I've already seen a little over 500 images.
Oh, damn. Okay,
I think
so...
the biggest thing is it's just lawmakers don't understand what they're requesting with these laws.
No, they don't. And that's...
I think they do. They understand that someone handed them a check with zeros on it.
They're, you know,
that's a different understanding than actually knowing what they're asking for.
True.
They've offloaded it on the service provider. They don't have to know. Oh, wait a minute. This is something they're going to be offloading to a service provider. They don't have to know.
Yeah. That's the truth of it. They're making the rules and then walking away. You know, they're just saying thou shalt and not sticking around to deal with the consequences of that decision.
And that's a problem with a lot of legislatures. A long time ago, farmers were a part of the legislature. Now it's just politicians.
Thou shalt stop the tide. You deal with it.
Pretty much. So. Okay, next story up. This one is actually interesting. This is from the LA Times. Corporations are increasingly spying on nonprofit groups they view as potential threats with little fear of retribution, according to a new report by Corporate Watchdog Group. So the Corporate Watchdog Group is very likely biased. I just want to point that out.
It's probably a nonprofit also.
So, you know, I'm just pointing out the report from the article is probably biased because they don't bother to point that out in the... Good Lord, they're trying to define in the IRC what, you know, where does it stop? And it's like, well, with blood's drawn. It's like, wait a minute, God, what the hell kind of...
So what you're saying is no one can get their red wings without going to jail.
Oh, for the love of... Madman, I don't want to know how you know these things.
It's Madman.
I just need to keep my mouth shut whenever they're trying to go lower, because I think I can win.
You probably can't. Just get in the IRC and type directly, damn it. I mean, it's easy. Go on the webpage, and go up under feedback, and there's an IRC channel.
Okay.
That way you can get in there and argue with them.
And now everybody flees the IRC channel.
Madman gets in the IRC and wins. It's like, what? He just won IRC. How the fuck do you do that? I mean,
like, is someone gonna send me a cookie?
That's awesome.
You actually get the game over screen. It's just, wait a minute. So, okay. Where was I? Right. So, corporations are increasingly spying on nonprofit groups they view as potential threats with little fear of retribution. According to... Psychros sends Madman a cookie. Careful, he's coming in, Psychros. Oh, damn. little fear of retribution, according to a new report by a corporate watchdog group. The large companies employ former Central Intelligence Agency, National Security Agency, FBI, military, and police officers to monitor, in some cases, infiltrate groups that have been critical of them. According to a report by the Essential Information, which was founded by Ralph Nader in the 1980s. Many different types of nonprofits have been targeted with espionage, including environmental, anti-war, public interest, consumers, food safety, pesticide reform, nursing home reform, gun control, social justice, animal rights, and arms control groups. Wait, you've got gun control and arms control. Oh, okay, whatever. Apparently, I'm not up on my left wing protest groups.
Well, you have to control your arms and your guns.
Yeah, I guess.
Because the arms control the guns.
Yeah. The spying is problematic because some investigators violate laws. A French utility was fined about $2 million in 2011 for hacking the computers of Greenpeace France, while chilling groups that stand up for consumers, the report said. Corporate espionage against nonprofit organizations is an egregious abuse of corporate power that is subverting democracy, said Gary Ruskin, the report's author. Who will rein in the forces of corporate lawlessness as they bear down on the nonprofit defenders of justice? I just imagine the guy talks like that. Corporations and their trade associates have been linked to a wide variety of espionage tactics against nonprofit organizations, including posing as volunteers or journalists to obtain information about nonprofit activities, the report said. Many of these tactics are either highly unethical or illegal, the report said. Essential Information is a Washington-based nonprofit that promotes corporate accountability. So, there's that. And I still don't see Madman in the IRC. I'm disappointed. I was wanting to watch him get in there and just go nuts on people.
I'm in the IRC. I just haven't said anything.
Oh, there it is. Madman has joined IRC. Came home from Winners You Drive. Okay, I can't watch IRC and read show notes at the same time. So
IRC does not translate well to audio shows.
It's. I tell you though, I love this story because it's so damn cyberpunk. I mean, it's corporate espionage against protest groups,
right?
Which I find hilarious. So this this next site is, well, you can I can't read out that URL. It's actually an I2P URL that happens to resolve. It's going through a proxy. So
can anybody do modem noises?
I'm not sure how you say that without just barfing all over yourself there. So you'll have to go to the show notes for that one, or, you know, Sard posted it in. But the article is actually rather interesting. Today, reports of I2P-based malware began to surface. The malware is named I2 Ninja, probably a combination of I2P and Ninja. Gee, you think? It is reportedly Russian in origin, observed at a Russian cybersecurity forum. This is not surprising, as Russian developers are prominent in both malware and I2P. I2 Ninja is not particularly special, but here's the feature list. 24-hour ticket system, accessible only via I2P and encrypted. A selection of modules, like a form of hijacker for Chrome, Firefox, and IE. More modules target poker and mail programs, include search functionality. Comparatively, I2 Ninja is not interesting compared to other malware if you discount the I2P aspect. Many other rootkits have better features. However, the I2P abilities may lead to a new stage of malware development. We've observed anomalies in the botnet that struck Tor. Maybe botnet operators are understanding the importance of such networks. Something to watch is the mention of upcoming VNC functionality within the hidden sessions abilities, VNC over I2P. So the point is, this, I think I cut it out of the article, this malware uses I2P for its back channel. So that's interesting. Because we saw it over Tor a couple of months ago. Now they're using I2P. And I2P... I2P is harder to track. With Tor, you can get an idea of how many users are on based on, you know, traffic flowing through the onion routers. With I2P, and it's so damn distributed out, and because it injects fake packets to keep the traffic levels constant, I don't know how you would tell how much traffic is flowing through it. So
yeah, good point, man. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, the malware itself isn't really all that impressive, except the fact it uses I2P as its back channel. So.
Right. Well, I mean, it's probably a start. We'll probably see more and more.
Oh, yeah. I'll probably see bunches of it before the end of it.
Right.
So. But, all right, last story up. And this one was almost a discussion topic for today instead of the pricing, but I thought we'd have more fun with the pricing. This is from Winamp.com. Winamp.com and associated web services will no longer be available past December 20th, 2013. Additionally, Winamp Media Players will no longer be available for download. Please download the latest version before that date. See release notes for the latest improvements to this release. Thanks for supporting the Winamp community for over 15 years. So, yeah, Winamp is actually going away. AOL has finally killed it. Something we all knew would happen when AOL bought the damn thing. No official word on Shoutcast yet. There are rumors of a sale to Microsoft, which would make sense, given the name. But, now, I actually still use Winamp on my phone.
I like Shoutcast TV, or I did 3 years ago when I was using it.
But, yeah, I mean, iTunes and, you know, VNC and, not VNC, VLC. VNC is something else. I mean, of course, Windows Media Player and everything else just kind of comes with systems these days. So, I mean, I don't.
Yeah,
you know,
but it was
all
about the visualizations, man.
Oh, absolutely.
Where else can
Milk
you get
drop
the better visualizations? But
oh, yeah. All the different plugins for Winamp, too. I remember going nuts and spending hours just, you know, building the custom Winamp installation with skins and plugins.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Else. So I should mention, Psychro sent me this story. Sard sent me this story. And, you know, I found it myself, too. So it's just.
I think VLC has a free Android version, too.
I don't know. But the thing is, Winamp, nobody really did Shoutcast like Winamp did.
Yeah, Winamp was amazing.
Now, and we should clarify, the program, I mean, if you've downloaded the program, it's still going to work. I mean, some of their web stuff in their media library isn't. And, you know, I mean, but just Winamp was a nice little media player, and I still was loading it on a broadcast box up until very recently just to be able to get stuff to play. So,
right. No. It's just sad to go see it go, I think, because pretty much everyone I sent this to was like, oh, man, I used Winamp for so long and all that. So, I mean, it's kind of a piece of internet history, computing history, I think.
Oh, yeah.
I actually saw that the two guys who initially created Winamp and then sold it off back in the day, they did an AMA or are doing an AMA on Reddit right now.
Oh, are they?
Yeah, I can't remember their names. If you just search it, I'm sure you'd find it.
Well, they haven't been involved with Winamp since
sold
it, like back
but
in
like,
2000, right?
They were the reason that Winamp was good and everybody liked Winamp. You know, the second it was sold, it just stagnated and went to more garbage, you know?
But the thing with Winamp was it was the one player you could grab that would handle your MID files, your tracker files. Yeah, I had plugins for a bunch of other stuff if you had something weird. But early on, it was the only one that would play MP3s, really.
Yeah.
So, you know, of course, Windows Media added it later and all the codecs and all that other stuff eventually came around. But early on, if you wanted to play MP3s, which was, you know, the thing, you were using Winamp. So, yeah. I don't know. I'm not even on Windows anymore, so I guess I'd be using, you know, AMP or Amoric, or there's a couple of different ones out there that float around, so. But, I don't know. I'm not. You know, you can always go on old versions and grab it. I'm sure there's people out there mirroring the plugins database and the forums and all that shit right now. But the thing is, I don't know if Shoutcast is going down or not. They haven't said one way or the other.
Right.
And now that's not really going to affect us. Everything we run is on Icecast. But you know, Winamp was the player if you wanted to get on Shoutcast. So.
Yep.
Oh well.
I like what what Laser said, but who's going to whip the llama's ass now? I mean,
well, I was assuming our BSD guys would take care of that, or not BSD.
Could be rape porn. They can't do it in Britain.
Yeah, right, exactly. Right. That's banned now.
BDSM, not BSD. Yep, that server operating system will take care of it. So, yeah. All right, let's go ahead and do this. Yo! Hadouken! You know, we had to go get the little Winamp, you know, demo. It, you know, it really whips the llama's ass, and put that on the soundboard.
That would actually, yep. Yeah, that would be cool.
We should do that.
Miranda.
Now, I know I was talking about maybe doing some Bitcoin mining for a digital dojo. I'm not ready yet. I just haven't had a chance to play with it, really. I've got the ASIC miners in. They look like fun. But mining Bitcoin right now looks like it's futile. So I'm going to play around with some alternative currencies. So instead, what I have is a nice classic hack. There's a nice Android application called Wiggle Android. And it is a open-source war-driving app to net stumble, display, and map found wireless networks and cell towers anywhere in the world, easily uploading it to the Wiggle.net database. Wiggle was started in 2001 and now has over 59 million Wi-Fi networks worldwide. The app has compete on the global Wiggle leaderboard for most networks listed. You can, and this is the fun parts, you can export to CSVs or KMLs on your SD card. It can do the audio and text to speech alerting, local database to track new networks found, and real time map of networks found on OpenStreetMap, and no ads. So, very nice little war driving app for Android, and I just hadn't played with it yet. I did find a YouTube video of some guy who thinks he's a monk demoing it. He's got like this really big hood on, and when he's first starting it, he's in his car, so it's real dark, and I guess he's going for a vibe of some sort. But it's a very nice little war driving app, and just thought I would list that one out. So yeah, he's a server monk. That's what it is.
Nice.
Yeah, there was something on the page about Bluetooth there, Mation. I think it was for using like Bluetooth GPSs and stuff like that. So, but very nice little war driving app, free, quick one. Easy, and it does the mapping for you, which is handy. So, but we mentioned Bitcoin, and we have Suave here. So, Suave, if you got, I didn't put any stories in. I saw the thing got close to $750 or something like that.
Yeah, it got up again. You know, it does this every couple of months. You get all the newbies in, and because they see it's going up and everybody buys in, and then they see it skyrocketing, so even more people are buying in, and then one person makes a big sell and they're like, oh my god, the price is crashing out, and then everybody starts panic selling and it crashes back down, and then it kind of comes back up and it kind of levels off, and but it always levels off higher than where it was before. So it's we'll see. You know, I'm still not sure where it's going.
Okay, cool. That's all I got. Listen to the stream. We're always working on it. Pure Decking every Thursday. Shoot the Noise on Wednesdays. The Missing Dialogues on Tuesdays. IHN on Saturdays. Psychros has apparently made $1,350 on his... Suave, we told you, you had us sold. Psychros is making money.
Excellent. Good for him.
Yeah. So, IHN on Saturdays, the Galaxy 15 radio site, the Twitter handle, the feedback form, the Sim on OS Grid, the IRC, the subreddit, and the TCP/IP via carrier pigeon. I'm sure I've forgotten something.
And now come in two llamas.
TCP/IP via llama, yes. You can send that care of BSV. he will take care of the llama. And we'll have llama steak later.
It so. May take a while, the breeding programs.
Oh, God. He's going to get a Disney Imagineer involved with Madman so he can breed the llamas.
You need a fresh supply.
of Imagineers or llamas?
Yes.
All right. That's all I got. I'm going to hit play on this music now, unless anybody's got something to throw out here real quick.
On your story with the nonprofits trying to get extra legal help, aren't a lot of them just targeting some industries for blackmail money? I mean, don't get me wrong, I know there are some good nonprofits that are actually decent watchdog groups, but a lot of these, they're just targeting industry.
I don't know. I'm just, like I said, I thought the report was probably pretty damn biased, seeing its source and the way the author talked. But I thought the story was cyberpunk, so I just like people doing corporate espionage against nonprofit groups, protest groups.
Nice.
So, I'm sure they're doing it back. I mean, hell.
No, yeah, that's what Greenpeace does.
I mean, I'm sure there's
shady
stuff going on.
Well, not Greenpeace, Elf. Elf's the one that does most of the non-profit terrorism. Greenpeace, some of the non-profit terrorism. Yes, that's.
Well, you
so
know,
how do you
think
about
it?
In your taxes?
How much profit is there in blowing yourself up for a cause? I mean,
it depends. Did you dump your stock before you flew the plane into the World Trade Center? And then have your, I don't know, survivors buy at the low point?
I don't know. I don't know.
Just cut the show.
Just cut the show. Okay. BSV says cut the show.